We're live and we're local. This is a Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, November 2nd, 2017. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and we've got a great show for you today. We'll talk with this week's Evening at Egan speaker, Kate Troll. Hannah Neer will update us on the call for submissions of Tidal Echoes. Annette Bellamy will talk about her solo show opening this Friday at the Alaska State Museum. And we'll hear about this weekend's Combrio concert with Sally Schlichting and more. Nancy DeCherney will also be here to highlight this weekend's entertainment with Arts Up. Taking a look at weather, it's sunny. Tonight, though, it'll be partly cloudy with a low around 25, and tomorrow mostly cloudy with a high near 38. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Preserving the Lakota language as soon as children can talk is one of the goals of a nonprofit in South Dakota. Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation is working to build economic and community resiliency on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Jim Kent has more in our series, State of Change.
It's a rainy day on the Pine Ridge Reservation, but in a small yellow building at the edge of the village of Oglala, everyone's safe, warm, and dry, and having fun. Yet the daycare program here isn't just about playing, says Christina Gallego. It's also about learning.
This daycare is a Lakota immersion childcare, meaning that the children that attend here speak and hear only Lakota.
Gallego is the second language coordinator for Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation.
The idea behind everything is to ensure that the Lakota language is carried into the future. So the moment the kids step into the door, they are supposed to only hear Lakota.
Children here range from 18 months to 4 years old. Teachers here are Montessori certified and have created a program based on the Lakota culture, Lakota lifeways, and songs. The goal, says Gallego, is to ensure that the children are fluent in their language and well-educated.
They are learning how to speak the language, understand the language. We're teaching them the alphabet. Once they go into the kindergarten immersion, they will be learning how to read, write, do math, everything in Lakota.
Notwithstanding, the children easily shift back and forth from Lakota to English, even as they learn their traditional language. Gallego sees this as a positive for Native people who need to function in a world where English is the predominant language. As for tangible benefits of the program, Gallego points to her six-year-old son. He's gotten so used to speaking Lakota, she says, that he wonders why all the adults in his community don't speak their traditional language.
I know I'm Lakota.
I'm Jim Kent.
Canada's National Investigation into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls has released its interim report a year after the struggling commission began its work. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
The commission has faced sharp criticism from families and survivors who say there's been no clear action plan. The commission has also been plagued with resignations in key positions, including one of the commissioners. This week, it held 3 days of hearings in Nova Scotia. Now, after only a year, the commission is making recommendations, including more funding and the setting up of a national police task force that could investigate or reopen cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women. Brian Elfson is one of the commissioners.
Given our mandate does not mandate us to reinvestigate or reopen these types of files, we can refer these types of files to authorities where we have concerns. But in order to properly address concerns raised in investigations, we're recommending that a police task force be set up.
For now, the inquiry can only refer cases to police when new information is uncovered. But many of the families of victims want to know why investigations were stopped or leads were not fully investigated. And the Chief Commissioner Marion Buller says she will make a formal request for more time and more money for the inquiry to continue its work.
Today, as we're here in this room, Indigenous women and girls are suffering violence that somehow has become normalized. And that's a national tragedy.
Over the past 35 years, police reports estimate the number of those missing and murdered at nearly 1,200.
That was Dan Karpinchuk, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, advising us all to protect the circle of life. Help prevent the spread of the flu by getting a flu vaccine each year. Learn more at aaip.org. Support by AARP. At AARP, we create and connect you to unique tools and programs to help you save money and tackle the issues that matter most to you, your family, and your community. What we do might surprise you. More at aarp.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're tuned into A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guest today is Kate Troll, Alaskan author, adventurer, and activist. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Lovely to be here.
So I'm sure you've been on lots of great adventures lately, but one of them is your book tour. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. I've been back east doing talks at Tufts University, as well as the Yale School of Forestry and the City University of New York. And my talk is focused on the 10 points of hope for addressing sustainability and climate change. So it is the same talk that I will be doing tomorrow night, but of course with a little bit more of an Alaskan orientation. I've also been traveling in the Pacific Northwest, Seattle, Bellingham, again doing talks and book signings. And when I get to do the talk, it's being very well received because people are so depressed about this issue.
We want to hear the good news.
They want
right?
some hope, you know. And I get stopped all the time by the students afterwards saying, oh, thank you for coming. You know, I really care. I'm motivated. This is my field I want to work in. And I just needed to hear some hope. So, reasons to be hopeful.
Yeah. I feel like we all need that. And your book is along those lines as well?
Yes. The book is called The Great Unconformity, and essentially it's an adventure memoir that's wrapped up in the global events of sustainability and climate change. So throughout the book, I sprinkle what I call hope spots, and I wrap them up in adventure stories, if you will. The whole idea of coming up with a list of the 10 points of hope kind of happened after the book. When I was talking to my publicist, and they're always coming up with the 5 points for this and 10 points for that, and I was teasing them. I said, I bet you want me to come up with 10 points of hope, don't you? And they went, yeah, we do. And lo and behold, I went back to the book and realized I do indeed have 10 hope spots sprinkled throughout the book.
Great. Well, your talk tomorrow is about the 10 points of hope. But let's hear a little bit from your book, if you don't mind.
Sure. I'm going to read from one of the chapters in the back that is close to home here. What I like to do in my book is kind of mix in a little bit of nature writing with the hard realities of climate change. So this is from a chapter called From Baked Alaska to Obama. Baked Alaska is not just an ice cream cake and a mound of toasted meringue. It is the summer I am experiencing. Hardly a year goes by when the weather maps showing current summer temperatures compared with a 10-year average don't show large swatches of Alaska in the red zone. Off for a weekend camping trip, I was perched in one of those hot red zones on a beach in a collapsible camp chair designed for my sleeping pad. Sitting on the ground, I was able to rock back and forth, taking in either the grand view of the snow-capped Chilkat Mountains framing the far side of Lynn Canal, or twisting slightly to take in the calm, forested island view. Sea lions were barking to the south while songbirds were singing in the north. In the background, holding a steady rhythm, waves lapped softly. The whistling wings of scoters took off in flight with a soft yet high-pitched sound of wings beating in unison. I was at peace with nature. When nature is at peace, we must appreciate it so that we might understand the nature of peace. In the mid-distance view from where I sat in my snug camp chair, my husband was anchoring out our skiff. He was puzzling over tides and anchor lines. He scratched his beard as he laid out more line, forming a crisp silhouette of thought in action. All around me were calm, reflective waters. It was actually hot. I was getting a great tan in Baked Alaska. Climate change never felt or looked as good as it did at that moment. Soaking in all this warmth and beauty of a day, it was tempting to say, if this is climate change, bring it on. But I didn't, because of the salmon waiting for more rain to raise the water levels in the creeks before they could swim upstream home to spawn. I didn't say bring it on, because the very waters that were lapping softly in the background of my summer bliss are the ocean waters most at risk to ocean acidification.
Wow.
So there you got it.
And that's from The Great Unconformity?
The Great Unconformity, the subtitle, Reflections on Hope in an Imperiled World.
By Kate Troll. I think we can all relate to that sentiment when you're nice and warm and comfy in Alaska, which doesn't happen very often, and you're like, I don't know what's causing this. I don't know if I want to know. It's kind of nice, but it's also kind of disturbing.
Yeah, but you got to soak it in and enjoy those days.
Of course.
Yeah.
Now, you're a conservation activist, and there was some big news today I just wanted to touch on with you. A massive report was released stating that climate is indeed warming and humans are the dominant cause. What's your response to that?
Well, my response is we all have to get engaged. It's all hands on deck to do our part to avoid reaching that 2 degrees Celsius. And yes, greenhouse gas emissions are still going up. Actually, in some cases, they've flattened off a bit. But we're still on a projection to exceed that 2 degrees Celsius. So I take those reports very seriously. And I also temper them with knowing that there are positive developments out there. One of the things that gets highlighted in these reports is the growth of renewable energy by the private sector. And we are exceeding projections. So while we are not doing as well as we should be on reducing emissions, we are actually exceeding our projections for wind and solar deployment and use in commercial enterprises and residential. So you got to kind of keep on track, take those reports very seriously. I recently was able to hear EPA Administrator Gina McCarty. She was the administrator under the Obama administration. And she talked about climate change. And one of her lines was, yes, climate change is real. It's number two, it's definitely man-made. Therefore, women should rule the world. So there you have to. You got to take this serious topic on with a sense of humor as well. That was the lesson from her.
That's a good one.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, along those lines, you know, and this is just coming from me personally, I feel like there is a lot of pressure on individuals to make some pretty drastic changes to their own lifestyles in order to help save the planet. And I also feel like that pressure is a bit misplaced and should also be on, or more so on, large-scale industries to change some of their ways. Where do you feel like the responsibility lies?
It lies with the corporations that have been emitting large amounts of greenhouse gases, for sure. But it lies with all of us. If you look at the Paris Climate Agreement, it's based on individual and community actions. There is no one entity that needs to change their way. We all need to change our ways. But we don't have to sacrifice everything. You know, instead of driving a car that's, you know, getting less than 20 miles to the gallon, buy a hybrid, buy an electric vehicle. We're ideally situated for that. If you do energy audits in your house to reduce the amount of oil you're burning, you're going to make a difference in your own your own revenue sources. Mm-hmm. Your utility bills will be going down. So, yes, we have to change, but I don't look at it so much as a sacrifice, because there are many upsides to the benefits. If you ride your bike more instead of getting a car, great. You're going to be healthier because of it. If you start walking more instead of always relying on you know, jumping in the car to run down to the Breeze Inn, you know, you're going to be better off for it. And you collectively, it's going to be all those small steps that we all do as humanity that care about this earth.
That's great. Those are some pretty good tips. You know, I myself am an average downtown Juneau city dweller. Any other ideas I could do, or any other ideas that someone like myself could do to reduce my footprint?
Well, I think how you purchase goods and foods makes a big difference, being able to buy organic and local foods when you can. Those things add up. I think choosing, like I say, more energy efficient models on how you heat your house. Anyway, they all add up. There's, like I say, no one thing. I myself, you know, try to grow more food. I certainly pay attention to the eco labels that are on things when I'm going to purchase something. I want to know if it comes from a sustainable fisheries. Those types of measures make a big difference collectively.
Well, thank you. That's pretty helpful. And I, with all the doom and gloom in the news, especially when it comes to climate change, I'm really glad to hear that you have some good news to share. And the title of your talk for tomorrow's Evening at Egan lecture is 10 Points of Hope for Addressing Sustainability and Climate Change. Is there anything else you'd like to add about what you're going to be covering?
I'd like to encourage people to come out and be inspired. And I want you to know that I do ground my points of hope in reality, so it's not sugarcoating. And these points that I raise, I think, are very well founded. And I hope they lead to a really robust discussion. I really look forward to the questions and the answer periods. They've been the most informative and enjoyable part of the talk. So please come out and share your thoughts with me.
Thanks. And I'm glad that we have you not just here, but also out in the larger world representing Alaska and sort of being the voice of an activist, a conservation activist coming from Alaska. So just to recap the details of the talk, it's this Friday. It's at the Egan Library on the University of Alaska Southeast campus. Kate Troll, Alaskan author, adventurer, and activist, is the speaker. It begins at 7 p.m. and there will be Q&A. That's almost the most important part. Thanks for being with us today, Kate.
Thank you very much for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 2nd of November, 2017. It's the 100th anniversary of the Balfour Declaration, in which Great Britain declared its support for a Jewish state in Palestine. 1917, it all took place. A letter from Foreign Secretary Lord Arthur Balfour to Lionel Rothschild, a prominent British Zionist. And it was at that point that Jewish migration to Palestine began in large numbers. The Jewish population of Palestine grew from 50,000 in 1917 to 600,000 in 1947. It was on this day, 1920, KDKA in Pittsburgh sent out the first ever regular radio broadcast in the United States. And very soon, radio advertising proved to be very effective. It was the start of a new era in which advertising could enter the home without being carried inside. You listen to a baseball game. KDKA also did the first baseball game broadcast, 1921, and along came the commercials, and people accepted this. It also introduced instantaneous news and provided a powerful platform for politicians. It's the birthday of the poet C.K. Williams, born in Newark, New Jersey, 1936, wrote over 20 books of poems, a memoir, two children's books, several books of essays. C.K. Williams, who said that Walt Whitman was his favorite poet, he said, once you read him, you just knew that poetry had to be something other than what you thought it had been. It's the birthday of George Boole, 1815, in Lincolnshire, England, mathematician responsible for Boolean algebra, whose three basic operations of and, or, and not became the basis of comparing sets of things mathematically, and which became crucial for basic digital computer circuitry and telephone switching. George Boole, who did all of this without a university degree or even a particularly good early education, it was his father, a tradesman, who first began teaching the boy mathematics. Here's a poem for today by C.K. Williams entitled Peace. We fight for hours through dinner, through the endless evening. Who even knows now what about? What could be so dire to have to suffer so for, stuck in one another's craws like fish bones, the cadavers of our argument, dissected, flayed, but we go on with it to bed and through the night, feigning sleep, dreaming sleep, hardly sleeping so precisely, never touching back to back the blanket bridged across us for the wintry air to tunnel down, to keep us lifting, turning through the angry dark that holds us in its cup of pain, the aching dark, the weary dark. Then, toward dawn, I can't help it, though justice won't, I know, be served, I pull her to me. And with such accurate, graceful deftness, she rolls to me that we arrive embracing our entire lengths. A poem by C.K. Williams, Peace, from his collected poems, published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. And by Amazon Studios and Roadside Attractions, presenting Wonderstruck, from Todd Haynes, the director of Carol and Far From Heaven, starring Julianne Moore and Michelle Williams, based on the novel by Brian Selznick, now playing Select Cities Everywhere, November 10th. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 22 minutes after the hour. You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me is my next guest. She's a University of Alaska Southeast student, Hannah Neer. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. This is your first time on a Juno Afternoon, so that's a really big deal.
Indeed.
Hannah, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you study at the University of Alaska?
I am an English major, emphasis in creative writing, and minor in anthropology.
I majored in anthropology.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, thanks. So you're here today to talk about Tidal Echoes. It's mm-hmm. open for submissions for the next edition. What's your connection with Tidal Echoes?
So I am one of three student editors / undergrad interns with Tidal Echoes. I'm working on gathering submissions for the journal this edition.
Cool. And you've got the current copy in front of you, mm-hmm. and I have that copy at home, too. I really like it a lot.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It really is. We'll talk more about the cover art and all of that, but I was wondering if you would read a little bit from it for us.
Oh, sure. I'll read to you a piece that was published from a student at UAS. A Taste of Punjab. Curry spice intermingles with turmeric. My skin brushes between the bowls of spices. My eyes dart among the colors with relish. A strand of hair escapes its braided prison. I corral it as a wave of nutmeg, swirls into pepper and creates flavor, heat, the color and consistency of mud. Ginger root freshly peeled sticks to my fingers. Dry hands lick around the sharp sweetness. As mustard seed contrasts with cloves, fabric separates the scents from my nose, the sari wrapped around my shoulders begs attention. Sunshine-colored cloth descends. Stiff seeds ground to powder, invade fibers, and embed under nails as my arms embrace the softness of spices and silk. My sari is streaked with darkness. Designs of anise displaced among coriander leave smug marks of pride like a man who inhales the most powdered donuts from a string. Dinner will be delayed.
That actually happens to be my favorite, I think, from that whole book. I love Indian food, but I also really love the imagery and even like the smells and textures mm-hmm. it evokes. Good choice.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, so as I said before, you're here because, you know, there's a call for submissions mm-hmm. for the next Tidal Echoes, which will be sometime in the spring. Who should be thinking of submitting something?
anyone who lives in Southeast Alaska. It's not specifically a Juneau journal. It's everyone from all the small little communities all over the place. Our deadline is December 1st. So we're trying to encourage people, submit now. We'd love to have your work.
Mm-hmm. And are you looking for submissions from artists, writers, poets?
Well, Title Echoes is a literary and arts journal, so poetry, prose, photography, ceramics, paintings, any medium of art can be submitted.
Great. One thing that I really like about the publication is that it's not very expensive to purchase. Mm-hmm. If you see it in the stores, it's like it's so you get a lot of bang for your buck.
Yeah, and it's also available at all the libraries around.
And I believe I picked up my copy at the City Museum. So it's,
yeah.
Is it at the other museums as well?
Possibly so. I'm not sure where it's at currently.
Okay. So how should someone submit if they're thinking about submitting?
Well, to submit, you can just Google Title Echoes submissions and find a guide to submissions. Plus, there will be broadsides at the different libraries in Juneau and some of the smaller communities around Southeast in the next few weeks or so. Basically, you just have to go online and create a submittable account, which is free. It just requires your email address. And you can submit up to 5 poems. You can submit 3 pieces of prose. You can submit 5 or so photography pieces or paintings or different art mediums like that.
Fantastic. And what's the deadline for submissions?
December 1st.
Okay, so that's quite, you've still got some time.
Yeah, you've got some time.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Oh, and one thing I want to talk about was the cover. I particularly like the cover of this most recent edition. And you said the cover is the work of the featured artist. And this one was Rico Worls. It's red and blue. It's form line. It's fantastic. Can you give us any hints about the next edition's cover?
The next edition's cover will be art.
But the featured artist?
The featured artist will be Chris Taylor.
That's awesome.
You should check out his work if you haven't seen it yet.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've certainly checked it out. I hope our listeners will check it out, and you heard it here first. So that sounds great. So thank you so much, Hannah, for being here. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think that covers it. Just make sure you submit by December 1st. It doesn't have to be specifically work related to Alaska, as you can tell from the piece that I read.
That's true. Yeah.
So we would love to have everybody's work that can submit.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much for being here. I'm excited, looking forward to see the next edition. So, again, I'm glad that you were here today to tell us all about it. Hopefully the artists and the poets and the sculptors and the writers are getting excited and getting their submissions together.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Opening this first Friday at the Alaska State Museum is a new solo exhibition by painter Daniel Papke, Lost Language. This show, which runs till February 3rd, features dreamlike images and visual narratives that captivate the imagination. It begins with a free reception starting at 4:30 on November 3rd with an artist talk in the lecture hall at APK starting at 7. For more information, visit museums.alaska.gov.
Support comes from the University of Alaska College Savings Plan, helping to reach educational savings goals. Save in Alaska. Study anywhere. Information at uacollegesavings.com.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guests in the studio today are Annette Bellamy and Claire Imamura from the State Museum. And Annette, you're a very talented artist, and you're here to talk about your solo exhibition. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
Annette, your work is really striking. I just love it. I love the look of it. I love the use of earth tones in a lot of it, the arrangement of the pieces in the installations. And this is mainly going by photos that mm-hmm. I've seen. How does it feel to be invited to exhibit at the new State Museum?
It's a privilege. I first saw the museum when I got here on Monday, and it's fabulous. And the exhibit space is incredible. I'd had diagrams, but I hadn't been in the space. So it's a privilege.
I think it's a match made in heaven. Your work in that space, it's going to look amazing.
I was here in 2010 and had a solo at the old museum, and I enjoyed that experience as well. But this is fabulous.
Next level.
Yep.
Is everything all ready to go right now?
Real? Actually, Claire just took me off the scaffolding, so no.
We got to get to the radio station.
I was just telling Claire I wish that we could work till a little later than 4:30, but that's okay.
So from what I understand, you're a sculptor and a potter, among other things. You said you do a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. But your work is inspired by years of experience as a commercial fisherwoman. So how did that come to be? What's the story?
Well, 44 years ago, I came up to Alaska just for a summer. I think everybody has a lot of stories like this. I was going to University of Washington, wanted a summer job, and I ended up staying. I met my present husband, and 6 months after meeting, we bought a fishing boat, and we've fished ever since, which is kind of might be budging up on a record for the times. And it was the two of us for 15 years, and we've stayed to a small boat, which I always wanted to. So we have up to only 4 people on the boat. And my brothers, my nephews fished with us. So, yeah, it's a lifestyle that has inspired me because you're out in the elements, and it's certainly Alaskan, you know, experience.
What's the most magical moment you've had out on the water?
Huh. There's a lot. Been a lot of magical moments. And I always tell people that even when you're in a gale and if things are out of control, when I go home, that like kind of gives you a sense of your position in the world. So even when it's rough, I think it ends up being a good experience. But magical, in the summer when it's middle of the night and it's kind of a glow of the sunset maybe, but you can still see and we're seining. There's just moments like that when it's calm and reflective, even though you're tired. I mean, it's just we have the opportunity to see a lot of beautiful country. Long lining down the Alaska Peninsula was always a highlight as well. But lots of experiences, exciting experiences as well. Had so many years, it'd be hard for me to pick.
Right. And a lot of encounters with wildlife or marine life, I should say, out there.
A lot. And we support the Alaska Marine, the Alaska Council of Conservation, and the AMCC, Alaska Marine, AMCC from Anchorage. I'm so bad at these acronyms. But we've always been supportive of sustaining the fisheries as well, and I think in keeping small coastal communities going with the fisheries and the history of fishing ports. But a lot of changes. We went to the Halibut Commission meetings for 10 years. During the Derby days and got to know actually a lot of Southeast fishermen. But it's been a lot of changes over the years, a lot of changes. So I have concerns about the fisheries.
Not that size matters or anything, but what's the biggest fish you've ever caught?
Well, that would be a long time ago, probably maybe 250, 300. I don't know. They're large. We actually release those now.
Those are halibut?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we release those now, which is bizarre, but we do.
Must be something to see, though.
They're huge. They're female. And we like to, right now, we're releasing the large ones. We'll maybe keep a 100-pounder. And we have crew that can testify to this. But the really huge ones, yeah, they're amazing. It's just huge, huge, huge. We have hydraulics to pull them up.
Oh, my goodness. I've never seen one that big in real life. I can only imagine.
Yeah.
So what are some of your favorite materials to work with as an artist, not a fisherwoman?
Clay is wonderful. It's meditation when you're throwing a pot. I think it's a basic tactile human experience to get into clay, the earth. And maybe it balances my life of being on the ocean so much. But clay is kind of my first love in the arts. I mean, I have my first exhibit was watercolor drawings. But and to throw a really good pot, it's just once in a while you have that magic pot that comes out. And there's no one, you know, just have to throw a lot of pots. But for special materials, the fish skin is one that has surprised me. And it was Fran Reed who kind of brought back fish skin sewing to the public eye and actually was used as a consultant on fish skin in the collections of museums in Berlin and the Smithsonian. And she wasn't native, but she did a lot of research with elders and got her own techniques going. And before she died of cancer, a couple months before she died, she invited 10 artists, and I was one of them. And it was in the middle of salmon season, but I went. And biggest catch of the year, but I wasn't there. But anyway, she passed this on. At the time, I never thought I'd use it because I'm so immersed in clay. But it tells a story. And I have my hands in fish for so many years that I've done 3 installations that are quite large. And there's one at this exhibit. And it probably represents about, 5 months of sewing. And it's all the fish that we've caught and had for meals. And anyway, so it has told a story. I think I might have told the stories I need to tell with it, but this is one of the major pieces is in this exhibit, and it's called The Sea Within Us.
I like that.
Yeah.
Is fish skin the most unusual or most unconventional material you've ever worked with as an artist?
Yep, it certainly is. You have to sew it when it's wet. There's a smell. It doesn't bother me, but you sew it when it's wet, so it's not quite as seductive as clay. And there is a little bit of smell, which doesn't bother me, but people around me, especially when I was sewing when we were traveling. You see, I was out of my clay studio, and we were sewing it when I was actually in the horse trailer. So there's a lot of stories here.
A bouquet of smells.
Yes, it was. And then I'd stretch it out and dry it on these boards, and I was not in Alaska, but we'd have 50-pound boxes sent to us on this trip in increments because we like to live on our fish. So anyway, it was different. And I either have it in denatured alcohol or I have it frozen to keep it from, decomposing. So, yep, it's not something I would probably choose to use a lot. I mean, consistently.
I don't think there are too many artists out there who would choose to work with it, but... So excited about the exhibit. Claire, can you tell us a little bit about when it's opening and what we can expect to see?
Sure. The exhibit's opening tomorrow for First Friday. The Friends of the State Library Archives and Museum are sponsoring a First Friday reception. That's from 4:30 to 7. And at 6, Annette's going to do a gallery tour. So she'll take you through the exhibit and you can experience the art with the artist. So that's a great opportunity. And it is going to be filmed for broadcast by K2 for later distribution on 360 North.
So. Oh, wonderful. Congratulations.
Yeah,
it's an honor.
Thank you. Yeah, it is.
And what else is going on at the State Museum?
On Saturday, Annette is hosting a youth art activity for ages 6 to 10. It's a clay workshop, and we still have a few spots open. So if you have a 6 to 10-year-old or if you are a 6 to 10-year-old, you can call the museum at 465-2901. And register for that.
Great. Is there anything else that either of you two would like to add about either the exhibit or activities at the museum?
Well, the museum is wonderful. I want more time to look at the permanent exhibit in the museum. But my exhibit has the title as Moving Mountains, and that is the title of a large installation piece that is centered in the gallery. And it's the first time that I've seen that installed because my studio isn't large enough. I had a maquette of it, but this is totally different. So it's about 12-foot diameter. And it's about looking at mountains in a different way and our resources.
Intriguing.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to see it. Well, thank you for being with us. That's Annette Bellamy speaking about her solo exhibition opening tomorrow at the State Museum. And thank you, Claire Imamura, for keeping us updated on the details and the happenings at the State Museum. And just thank you both for being here today. And good luck with everything tomorrow and this weekend.
Thank you. Hope to see you tomorrow.
Yes.
This is Bird Note. By the time November rolls around, the bird songs of summer can seem a distant memory. The breeding season is well past, and our summer birds visiting from the tropics have fled south, like this sweet-voiced rose-breasted grosbeak. But birds that stay in temperate North America through fall and winter are by no means silent. Vocal communication is essential to birds, large and small, throughout the year. Small birds like chickadees and kinglets often mix in a flock while foraging in the cooler months, calling as they go, making quite a racket as they wander through a patch of woods. There's always something to listen for, signs of life, geese flying overhead, like these snow geese. By calling in flight, birds help coordinate movement as a flock. And since adult pairs of geese and swans stick together all through the year, even in winter flocks, some of the calls we hear are pairs keeping tabs on one another. And sunny November weather may inspire wintering birds like this white-throated sparrow to burst into song. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
Move me!
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. We were just listening to Flute Loops by the Beastie Boys, an appropriate intro to my next guests who are all part of or connected to Flutatious, the Combrio concert this weekend. So welcome to the show, everybody.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Could you please just each introduce yourselves and tell me how you're connected to Flutatious?
Sure. So my name is Sally Schlichting, and I'm the coordinator of the Combrio Chamber Series, which is a series of six concerts this year. And this is now the third in the series, and I'm producing this with Flutatious, the flute quartet, Juno's one and only flute quartet. And
my favorite,
yeah,
Juno flute quartet.
With concerts this weekend. So
excellent.
I'm Colleen Torrance. I'm a piccolo and flute player that joined Flutatious in 2015.
My name is Stevie Spinka. I'm a flute and alto flute with Flutatious. Been a member of Flutatious since 2010.
Cool. And Sally, you play the flute as well.
I do, but yes. I won't be playing on this program.
She gets a break.
Yeah. So how long have all of you been playing the flute and your other instruments?
I've been playing since about 9 years old and started in an elementary school band and was pretty excited to be welcomed into their little ensemble back when I was in fourth grade. So it was fun. I've been playing since I was about the same age, so really a long time. I've picked up the alto just last year or 2 years ago. I actually borrowed Sally's alto flute, and then I went out and bought my own, and it's cool. Been great.
All right. Well, we've established that you're qualified. And do you play any other instruments besides the flute, piccolo, or alto flute?
I do not. I don't either, actually.
But there is one member who plays bass flute in this program.
Yes, that
so
is true.
So there's going to be a bass flute on the program.
That's pretty cool. I never even heard of it.
It's really cool.
It's wonderful.
That's Sandy Fortier. Yeah. She's playing the bass flute on the Bach Toccata and Fugue in D minor. And C flute, too. And then also our fourth member, Lisa Ray, also playing C flute and as well piccolo.
Mm-hmm. This is also exciting. I've never even heard of some of those flutes. And the name of the concert is called Causing Trouble. Very clever. And I love the, album cover style photo that's on the event flyer and on the event page on Facebook. It's so edgy. It's just not what you'd expect from a flute quartet. It's
definitely got
Did you guys have fun
attention.
With that photo shoot?
So much fun.
We did it out at Doug's Auto Body and... Yeah, we had a great time.
It's amazing, and you guys look great. I love it. So would it be safe to say that this might not be your average chamber music concert?
I'd say it's a little more modern music, more contemporary. There's some classical works, but there's also some pieces with extended technique, which we in the business say is sort of more special effects that you can do on the instruments, so kind of some really interesting sounds and articulations.
Percussiveness.
Yeah, percussiveness. And there's a jazz piece, right?
Yes. Yeah, the Divertimento jazz is a more jazzier style piece for four flutes.
Kind of a funny piece at the end. Do you want to talk about that?
Angry Tunes is what it's called, and it's by composer, I think it's Michael Rosiak, and it's for flute ensemble or flute choir, so from the piccolo on down to the bass, though minus alto. We have primarily C flutes on there, but we do have the upper and the lower voices, and it kind of speaks to four different classical pieces. I can remember three off the top of my head.
There's a Mozart.
In G major.
There's
concerto, right?
There's a concerto.
The Angry Tunes, actually our Angry Birds theme song is another piece to that. There's also the Harry Potter theme.
Oh, that's right. There's the Box Badinery.
Yes. That would be. So you'll hear mixes and pieces of that throughout the entire piece that gets played. It's pretty awesome and just a kind of a parody, if you will, on it.
Right.
That's a large ensemble.
This was the theme from the movie Angry Birds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a large ensemble with a lot of guest flutists, right?
Yeah, student flutists.
Yes, including students.
Juno area.
Right, so it's not just the four of you. You'll have a lot of other players.
Yeah, we've opened up the ensemble to some of Sandy's students, some of my students.
As well as other just peers that we have here in the community that wanted to play with us. So.
And it just sounds like so much fun.
You have a couple other musicians on the program too, correct?
Indeed.
Do some shout-outs?
Totally. Sue Kazama on piano. We're going to have her accompanying in a trio for saxophone and flute, and then also a piccolo duet. If you do think two piccolos can't tune together, they really can, and we'll prove it on Saturday and Sunday.
I've never thought that.
But our saxophonist,
William Todd Hunt, is going to be joining in that trio.
Cool.
For saxophone. Also joining us for the flute choir, some other local names. We've got Janet Sanbay and some recent high school grads. We've got Liz
Bryson.
And
Nicole Mannix.
Gabrielle Brown.
Inga White, also new to town, but definitely playing with Taku Wins and such.
Ann Sutton.
Reese Blakely.
Reese Blakely.
It's going to be good.
Great. All right, so let's get down to the nitty gritty. When can we see this awesome show?
So it is Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. at, guess where? K2 at 360.
Oh, how convenient.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. I had read that in advance, but you still had me for a second. I'm like, where?
Yeah.
Right here.
Cool. And then
right
Sunday afternoon. out at Aldersgate Methodist Church on Cinema Drive. Same show at 3 p.m.
That's in the Valley.
And cost is donation only and pay as you can.
Yeah. I love that. That's so nice for you to do that, it accessible.
Exactly. So, you know, kids can come and families can come, and it just helps cover our costs with a little donation. So,
I think you guys are going to have as much fun playing the concert as folks will have attending it.
Oh, we hope so. It was so much fun just to prepare these pieces.
All right. So I'm speaking with a couple of members of Flutatious as well as Sally Schlichting. The concert is Causing Trouble. It's Saturday, 7 p.m.
7:30 p.m.
at 360 North. Pay as you can. And again, on Sunday at the Aldersgate Methodist Church.
That's correct.
3 o'clock.
At 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you all for being here today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Nope. Upcoming concert for Combrio in a couple more weeks, November 17 and 18, is Love and the Last of the Light. And I'll be back to talk more about that in a couple weeks.
Well, I look forward to having you. And you guys might be the first guest ever who requested their own outro music. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're going to go out on here?
So the piece that we decided to play for the outro is part of the first movement of the Divertimento Jazz for the Flute Quartet. And this is just a little tidbit of what you'll hear at the concert when you come to see us this weekend.
All right, great. Well, thank you all for being here today. And here we go with the song.
Thank you.
That's the Divertimento Jazz for four flutes per request by Flutatious, my last guest. And here with me in the studio is my final guest, last but not least, the one and only Nancy DeCherney, back again with Arts Up. How are you doing, Nancy?
Pretty good. How are you?
Very good. Thanks.
It's another busy week.
Yeah, it's so busy that we only really have time to talk about Friday. So let's get going.
Let's get rolling on that. And so the first thing that you should do on Friday is come to the Arts Council and pick up your little flyer. It's such a big week. We're going to do the little zigzaggy kind again. We have Dean Graber from Rainforest Woodworking, Rainforest Custom. He does beautiful, fabulous whimsy and furniture, some stunning pieces. Stop in. Over at the SLAM, they have Moving Mountains by Annette Bellamy and Lost Language with
Daniel.
She
was just here.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Daniel was? Or
Annette was.
Daniel Popke from, I think he's from Skagway. He's going to also be doing something on Saturday for kids, a workshop for children with language. So and that will be free. So if you are interested, that's from 1:30 to 3:30. On Copa has Flowers at Copa by M.K. McNaughton. M.K. is amazing, and Copa is too, so you should go over there.
Paintings of Flowers by M.K.?
Paintings of Flowers by M.K. Painted gardens, bouquets on canvas. So, the City Museum has the art of Sharon Loba, longtime wonderful Juno artist who recently passed away, and the family has brought in a whole bunch of her work. So it's time to go and visit that. She was actually one of the first Alaska State Council on the Arts members, so a founding member of our organization. Alaska Robotics has Lindsay Knoll. She's an illustrator and founder of the Light Gray Art Lab in Minneapolis. Stop in down there. She'll be there from 4:30 until close. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Who knows what that means?
That's dedication.
Annie Kales has fabulous finds for you in your home, featuring Barbara Lavallee, Alice Tierstig, Willow Witten, and Heather Nichelle. Always a nice holiday, pre-holiday sort of thing to get going. They have a mixed metal, they have knitting, they have all kinds of stuff. So it's going to be wonderful at Annie Kales. Downtown Dames has Christina G. She's got jewelry, and there'll be snacks. The canvas is featuring McGill Pratt. Her show is called Big and Little. She does wonderful oil paintings. The Walter Soboloff Building has Baby Raven Reads book release, live carving demonstration, and their store specials, I think, are fur and copper, 10% off fur and copper. And this, it'll be Frank Katas and David Lang that'll be down there with the Baby Raven Reads, and Samuel Shakely and Renee Culp that'll be doing the artwork. On Franklin Street, the Barnaby Brewing Company, Meet Me in Alaska. Kelsey Kaiser will be exhibiting gratitude and paper art, and they're having a limited release brew, so stop in there. Rockwell has the Persisters Show, pre-existing condition, and this is only up for this particular day, so it's in the back room at the Rockwell.
That's exciting. I'm glad they're back with another show. The first one was amazing.
They do amazing work. They're a really wonderful group of female women artists. So don't miss it, because they only do it briefly like that. Kindred Post has Bronze Betty Finery. They are open from 5:30 to 7. It's a pop-up shop featuring vivid color, contrast, and texture. We have Rainforest Yoga. They've started their little free hour of yoga. So if you just want to test yoga, maybe you got a little stressed watching too much art, you can go in from 5:15 to 6:15, stretch it out, and then you'll be ready for the final push.
That's great. That's just about out of time.
Okay. Well, the one other thing I want to mention, we've got Juno Artist Gallery, Bustin' Out Boutique, Harbor Tea, and we are doing something called Old Fashioned Week. All the bars downtown are featuring a special drink in celebration of the new Jack. So you get done with all this and your yoga and go have an old fashioned.
My favorite. Thanks, Nancy. That was great Arts Up. You've been tuned in to a Juno afternoon. Jeff Brown's the producer. I'm the host, Shelley Delaney. Until tomorrow, have a great Juno evening.